From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. In 2011, the Federal Energy Information Administration declared that the Monterey Shale Formation, which spans 1,750 square miles in central and southern California, held over 15 billion barrels of recoverable oil, 64% of all the oil in the lower 48 states. Those numbers got the attention of the energy industry and the environmental movement, and the state of California, which could see a multi-billion dollar tax windfall if wide-scale fracking of the Monterey Shale Formation comes to pass. What are the pros and cons of increasing the use of fracking in California? We'll ask. Rock Zierman, CEO of the California Independent Petroleum Association. Bill Alliud, California Director of Governmental Affairs for the Environmental Working Group. And Jason Marshall, the Chief Deputy Director of the California Department of Conservation, the agency tasked with writing the state's new regulations on fracking. We'll also hear from Tupper Hall, Vice President of Strategic Communications with Western States Petroleum Association, Bob Merrill, a professor of geology at CSU Fresno, and Janice Gillespie, professor of geology at CSU Bakersfield. Fracking. Them are fighting words.
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from Paramount Agricultural Companies, growing healthy food for you and your family.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. How important is fracking to the oil and gas industry? We have a key spokesperson to answer that and other questions about fracking. He is Rock Zierman, the CEO of the California Independent Petroleum Association. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so fracking is currently being done in California, isn't it?
It is. In fact, it's been done in California for about 40 years. But it's only done in about a third of the wells that we actually drill in California, unlike some of the other states. And it's primarily done in Kern County. Probably 95% of all hydraulic fracturing is actually happening around Bakersfield. And people can actually go to frackfocus.org. It's a website that state regulators run where we disclose when and where and what chemicals we use. So about a third of the wells in California, and it's been done for, like I said, 40 years.
And where would you like to see fracking extended to?
Well, I think that is dependent on the geology, on the economics. We've been testing hydraulic fracturing for some years now to see if we can tap into the Monterey Shale. We know there's potentially 15 billion barrels of oil that can be produced there. But unlike in North Dakota, in the Bakken Shale, or the Eagle Ford in Texas, we have not been successful in using hydraulic fracturing to harness the Monterey Shale. So it's been limited use, and that's why we still only use about a third of the time.
What do you see as the advantages to fracking?
Well, you know, the easy oil is gone. You know, the days when Jed Clampett's going to fire a gun, it's going to come oozing out of the ground, those days are gone. And so the oil is now found deeper in little pockets of rock. And so you have to, and in fact, it's so tight that it's difficult for the oil to even flow to a wellbore in many cases. So hydraulic fracturing creates that avenue for it to go from the reservoir to the wellbore. But it's not used in all areas because it is very expensive to do. What you typically need is a long reservoir that you can stick a horizontal well right in the middle of and do multi-stages of hydraulic fracturing to get all that oil to flow to one well. That makes it economical. But unfortunately, in California, because of our geology, we haven't been successful in using that technology to harness the Monterey Shale.
But fracking is supposed to use a lot of water. Where does that water come from?
Again, we're fairly distinct from other parts of the country, whereas in North Dakota or Pennsylvania, they may use over a million gallons of water on an individual hydraulic fracturing job because they're doing that multi-stage fracking. We average about 166,000 gallons. You know, that's about an Olympic-sized pool. And to give a comparison for your viewers, you know, an average golf course in California uses about 300 gallons a day. So a well, and you keep in mind you will frack it once maybe in 10 years, is going to use about a half a day's use of water for a typical golf course.
You know, you were talking about the chemicals are disclosed on that website. I thought that was one of the issues that the oil companies were concerned about, you know, proprietary interest of what that chemical mix is.
Right. I don't think they ever had a problem with disclosing what the chemicals are. I think it was the exact recipe, in other words, the concentrations. If you look at a Coca-Cola can, it'll say on the back what chemicals they use, but it doesn't give you the magic recipe that's locked in a vault somewhere. And so they wanted similar treatment when it comes to their recipe.
What about the concern about the disposal wells that are going to be involved in fracking when the water is used?
Right.
What about that? The concern is it might impact the aquifer.
Right. Well, disposal wells, first of all, are distinct from fracturing a well. We currently dispose about 2 billion gallons of water a year through injection wells, disposal wells. And we're not the only industry to do that. Many industries, many public utilities use similar disposal wells. And so that's a highly regulated activity, both by the US EPA and the Division of Oil and Gas here in California. And we have to do a lot of things that you don't do with a typical well and what they don't do in other states. For instance, we have to map all the seismic fault lines, and we have to do an analysis of those to ensure that they're not going to negatively impact seismic activity.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that in terms of earthquakes. People are saying that fracking is maybe it's going to increase the frequency of earthquakes. True?
False. Okay. And that's pretty much unequivocally been answered by scientists, the U.S. Geological Survey, Mark Zoback at Stanford University. A lot of folks have discounted any direct impact between hydraulic fracturing and earthquakes. What I think some opponents of oil and gas have been doing is cherry-picking information about disposal wells. There are in other states, not in California, but other states, there have been instances where they haven't reviewed the local fault lines, and the injection of water has impacted those faults and caused some minor seismic activity. But in California, because of our tough regulations, that hasn't been the case.
So you're saying that where there is seismic activity, there shouldn't be fracking?
No, because, like I said, there's no link between hydraulic fracturing and seismic activity. The linkage has been in a few cases with the disposal wells. And as I said, the disposal wells, they do consider where the fault lines are and how that would impact them.
Okay, well, I want to thank Rock Zierman, the CEO of the California Independent Petroleum Association, for joining us. Fracking issues raise a number of concerns among environmentalists. What are those concerns? Bill Alio is the California Director of Governmental Affairs for the Environmental Working Group. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So why is the environmental community so opposed to fracking?
Well, I start with the industry itself says it's inherently risky, and their filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission for years ago now they say there's risks of explosions, spills, blowouts. So they themselves say there's great risk there. Then we have some evidence, limited, but across the country of pollution in groundwater, of the air, spills into creeks, people's lives being disrupted, property values changed. So across the country, fracking has received a bad name, a lot of because of Gasland 1 and 2, the two documentaries. There may be some bones to pick with the accuracy in there, but I think he gets his point across is that there's a sea change going on here of the way we produce energy in America, and we ought to be concerned. So to answer a little more nuance, though, the environmental community, I would say you have the average citizen who may have seen Gasland or seen someone light their tap on fire, and they're definitely concerned. They think this is happening in California where I'm against it. But once you dig deeper in California, the environmental groups here are working on it. It was mixed on the legislation that went through the Capitol as to whether we supported it or not. But whether you support a moratorium or ban is another issue. But back to the lead question, there is great concern, and especially because our state agency in charge of this, the Division of Oil and Gas, ignored fracking for 60 years. And so that's another big concern, is what has happened where we have no idea.
Well, what are the good aspects of fracking? I mean, for example, does it provide good jobs? They talk about the fact that we could gain energy independence. I mean, aren't those good things?
Well, you're probably referring to the Monterey Shale, which is actually a larger area than is usually depicted in the Central Valley, kind of spilling over towards the coast. You look at a good map, it's actually the Monterey Formation. It sticks up in Northern California. The first oil well was drilled in Humboldt County, and there's some Monterey Formation there. There's some on the east side of the Sierras in the Owens River area, and they're doing seismic surveying there, looking at that as an oil source. So one thing we need to differentiate in California, we're fracking for oil, not gas, for the most part, about 98% of the fracking here. And so we look at it as a big mixed bag. So if it came in bigger amounts to the Central Valley, say, where the thick areas of the Monterey Formation are, there might be more jobs created, but let's look at the Bakken Shale in North Dakota. I was recently looking at some documentaries done up there about how people's lives have changed. People are making more per hour. You can make $13 an hour flipping hamburgers, but also there's a lot more crime, prostitution, drug use, all that came with it too. At what price? Plus air pollution, water pollution. So it's a mixed bag. Yes, we need jobs in California. Yes, we need to develop our own energy sources to some extent, but I can talk more about how far do we need to go versus renewable sources.
Well, let me ask you about SB4, the fracking bill that was signed into law by the governor. Initially, a lot of environmental groups were supportive of it, but then they pulled. All of them pulled their support at the last minute. Why?
Well, I was part of the group that pulled. Environmental Working Group did. We strongly supported the bill all the way through till a week to go. Some amendments were put in related to the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, that we could not live with. So there are a lot of good things in SB4 about disclosure of chemicals and water use and how the Division of Oil and Gas should perform their job, because frankly, they fell down on the job for 60 years, and it was pulling teeth to get them to admit that and finally say, all right, we'll regulate fracking, but on their terms, which unfortunately are the industry's terms. But that's what we needed fixed by SB4, and that got fixed. But along with it came some problems on environmental review.
But isn't some regulation of fracking better than no regulation at all?
We believe so. That's why we supported it. We needed that done. It's just very difficult for the environmental community who sees CEQA, the Environmental Quality Act, as a key law to protect Californians and to have public access into decision-making processes, kind of really undercut at the end. And we know Senator Pavley needed to get votes. She needed the governor to say, I'll sign a bill, which she, in an unusual move, said ahead of time, get me the bill, I want to sign it. So things happened real fast the last few days of the session that we couldn't control. And so at the end, we pulled our support. We think some of those problems can get fixed in the next session. The governor's indicated that in his signing message. And so hopefully there, but there are parts that probably won't get fixed. We think the industry, the oil industry, is happy with some of that bill. Yes, it puts a much stronger regulatory burden on them, but it's not a burden. You know why? They're using toxic chemicals, using a lot of fresh water, disposing of toxic waste. This ought to be tightly regulated, and finally we'll get that out of the Division of Oil and Gas.
Okay, we've only got about a minute left in the segment. I want to ask you this last question. That is, it was recently reported that the Obama administration has tentatively settled an environmental lawsuit over oil and gas drilling in Monterey and Fresno counties with an agreement to conduct a statewide study of fracking and the possible effects on water and wildlife. Does that alleviate your concerns?
Not all the way. That refers to a Bureau of Land Management lease sale where some groups there sued successfully and BLM had to slow down and say, all right, we'll do a study. We've sued them on the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, saying they did an inadequate job environmental review, because they did, and we won. So they're retracing their steps and doing some better studies and looks at that. That's a good thing, and it doesn't alleviate our concerns with the state. That's the limited amount of fracking oil drilling on federal lands in that area. We're looking at the Monterey Formation as so widespread, along with existing fracking in Kern County and Los Angeles County, that has been way underregulated. So we're looking for an era of actually having the Division of Oil and Gas answer to the public first and Chevron and Occidental Oil second.
Well, I want to thank Bill Alio with the Environmental Working Group for joining us. Our next guest is Jason Marshall, the Chief Deputy Director of the California Department of Conservation. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thank you.
Well, there were several problems that SB4, the new fracking legislation, was trying to address. What were they?
Well, the legislature, when they were looking at the issue of hydraulic fracturing, it seems for us, from the perspective of a state agency, what they're really looking at was a concern in the public, a lack of public transparency about what's really going on in the oil field. So they've got a lot of provisions in the bill for transparency, but also some concern about this the practice of hydraulic fracturing. The bill has been expanded to now talk about all forms of well stimulation, which includes some acidizing type treatments. All really which are intended at getting at more oil out of the ground. And the legislature was really trying to fill it what they perceived as a gap in the regulations.
So specifically, what did the law do? Something about permits, required permits for new fracking wells?
Yeah, the current base of law before the bill was strong well construction provisions. Really what we broke it down to is oil operators have to build strong wells, and if they break, they have to fix them. What the bill said is, okay, we're going to have a special permit for hydraulic fracturing or other well stimulation treatments. We're going to have public notification both before and after of the treatment. We're going to require some groundwater monitoring. We're going to require a scientific study of the practice of well stimulation. And lastly, we're going to make sure that this practice gets reviewed under the California Environmental Quality Act.
You know, you mentioned acidizing. What exactly is that? And it's covered by the law. What is that?
Acid is used in oil and gas production by the operators for a couple of different reasons. The provisions of the law will apply to the use of acid to increase the permeability of hydrocarbon formation. So when the operators have drilled down into that formation 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 feet into the ground, if they apply that acid to the formation under pressure so that it fractures the formation, and then the acid is increasing porosity by etching the rock, or even if they just apply the acid out into a formation that's already fractured to increase the porosity of those fractures so that the oil flows back, those things are going to be covered by the bill. When they use an acid, say, to descale a well, just clean out the inside of it, that's not really covered by the bill. It's a routine maintenance activity.
But is acidizing going to be something that's used more in the Monterey Shale formation than other types of fracking procedures?
Acidizing is one of those well stimulation techniques that may work for portions of the Monterey Shale. The Monterey Shale isn't really a uniform across the entire part of the state that it underlies. Parts of it are fractured and folded. Other parts are less fractured and folded. Acidization, whether they call it acid fracking or just acid matrix stimulation, really works differently than, say, hydraulic fracturing, dependent upon how that hydrocarbon formation is built.
Okay. You were mentioning that the law also calls for a study to evaluate the risks of fracking, such things as groundwater and surface water contamination, greenhouse gas emissions, local air pollution, seismic impacts, and the effects on wildlife and native plants and habitat. Who's doing that, and when is it going to get done?
Well, the bill calls for the Natural Resources Agency, which is our parent agency, to conduct this study. It's an independent scientific study. We're obviously tasked with working on this by the Resources Agency. We're in the process right now of identifying who that independent consultant is going to be, maybe someone like the California Council of Science and California Council of Science Technology, or some other entity, Lawrence Berkeley Lab, UC System, maybe in CSU. But it has to be an independent consultant. That's the important part. And we have to get that study done, they have to get that study done and peer-reviewed by January 1st of 2015. So we're working on that.
That's a pretty tight timeline.
Working on earnest right now.
The governor, in signing SB4, called for clarifying amendments, and your agency is going to be tasked with developing those amendments. Will fracturing be allowed to occur before the regulations are completed?
Hydraulic fracturing happens now.
It's already happening.
It's already happening. It's been happening for 20, 30, 40 years in California under the existing regulations, as I summarized them earlier. Build your well to meet our existing standards, and if you break it, you have to fix it. But as of January 1st of next year, 2014, the bill contains provisions for an interim permitting process, interim certification process that will take cover that year from January 1 of 2014 until 2015. At that point in time, we have to be done with our regulatory development, all of the steps that we have to go through for that, public hearings and the like, so that we've got those in place ready to go January 1, 2015.
Okay. The California Department of Conservation will be tasked with coming up with the regulations under the state's new fracking law. Those regulations have implications for groundwater quality, greenhouse gases, and many other concerns. We're talking with Jason Marshall, the Chief Deputy Director of the California Department of Conservation. As we discussed earlier, the governor, in signing SB4, said he wanted to see additional clarifying amendments to the legislation. He's also said he was going to direct your department to, quote, develop an efficient permitting program for well stimulation activities that groups permits together based on factors such as known geologic conditions and environmental impacts, while providing for more particularized review in other situations when necessary. Can you please tell us what he means by that?
Yes. So there are going to be instances when well stimulation activity is very similar to another well stimulation activity that's taking place nearby. If you consider, say, the Lost Hills field in the west side of Kern County, you've got a lot of wells that are near to each other. So the environmental impacts at the surface are going to be very similar. The public noticing is going to be very similar. The same people who are concerned about this are in Lost Hills would be concerned about another well that's within the same size as, say, a football field. So when we start talking about looking at the impacts, environmental impacts, both at the surface as well as in the subsurface, to the degree that there are similarities in the operations, We're talking about looking to see if we can find similarities in the permitting.
So what's going to be your priorities when you draft the regulations?
Well, first and foremost, protection of public health, safety, and the environment in oil and gas development is central to our mission. When we start looking at these regulations, we're going to start with a real strong emphasis on well integrity, testing of the well before the well stimulation activity, monitoring the well's integrity during the stimulation activity, and then checking afterwards to make sure that there wasn't a compromise in that integrity. We're looking very strongly at increasing public transparency and awareness about the practice. We're going to educate as we're regulating. And then lastly, we want to make sure that these regulations are really concise, on point, and comprehensible for the oil and gas industry so that there is no ambiguity about what's really required here.
You know, a big concern appears to be the chemical mix that's being used in fracking, that somehow it's going to seep into the aquifer. How are you going to address that issue?
Well, that gets right back to well integrity. When wells are constructed, you think about a metal pipe that's going down into the hydrocarbon zone. But that metal pipe is sealed to the rock. It's cemented, literally, to the rock at various points up and down the formations. 2,000, 5,000 feet down, that pipe's passed through a number of different zones, some of which contain groundwater, others which may contain hydrocarbons. That cement seals the pipe so that there is no migration of fluids either up from the hydrocarbon zone into groundwater or groundwater down into the hydrocarbon zone. That's what we mean when we talk about well integrity, and that's how we make sure that there is no migration of those fluids into, say, an aquifer.
You know, there's another issue that people brought up, and that is the question of earthquakes, that fracking somehow either increases the frequency of earthquakes or earthquakes, they're concerned about earthquakes in a seismic region. They could be unstable or unsafe. How are you addressing those issues?
Well, SB4 does have us take a look at the faults, earthquake faults. And, you know, obviously in a state like California, we're all concerned about seismicity. What's important for people to realize is that where people are talking about earthquakes having happened associated with fracking, hydraulic fracturing, it's actually secondary. When a well is hydraulically fractured, the water that comes back up has to be disposed of in some manner. And when that water is put into a disposal well, into the ground, that can increase the pore pressure, which can cause a lubrication, if you will, lay term here, lubrication of a fault, and then cause it to move. In California, oil operators produce 3 billion barrels of produced water out of existing hydrocarbon formations every year. And that water, 75% of it is injected back into the ground, into the hydrocarbon formation, or 20% of it is injected back into disposal wells. What are the disposal wells in California? They're depleted oil aquifers, so we're not increasing pore pressures. Those 3 billion barrels of water that have been injected annually, we've been doing that, the operators have been doing that for years with no evidence of seismicity.
So, and so no impact then on in terms of earthquakes?
Right.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Jason Marshall with the California Department of Conservation, Rock Zierman with the California Independent Petroleum Association, and Bill Elliott with the Environmental Working Group for joining us.
Up next, with parts of the Monterey Shale Formation sitting in the agriculturally rich San Joaquin Valley, the implications for the valley are enormous. We'll talk to Tupper Hull, Vice President of Strategic Communications with Western States Petroleum Association, Bob Merrill, a professor of geology at Fresno State, and Janice Gillespie, a professor of geology at CSU Bakersfield, to get their take on what fracking the Monterey Shale Formation would mean for the valley.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. What will fracking mean for the San Joaquin Valley? We have three experts on that issue. Tupper Hull is the Vice President of Strategic Communications for the Western States Petroleum Association. Bob Merrill is Professor of Geology at Fresno State. And Janice Gillespie is a Professor of Geology at CSU Bakersfield. Welcome, all of you, to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Well, let me, Tupper.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm great. I'm very happy that you're here, Tupper. Let me ask you the first question. Recently, the governor signed a bill on fracking, SB4. What are your thoughts on that bill?
Well, SB4 is a very comprehensive bill. It has a tremendous number of new regulations that will govern the practice of hydraulic fracturing and other energy production technologies. We felt the bill was went farther than was necessary, but at the end of the day, the governor and the legislature essentially rejected calls to place a moratorium or otherwise ban the practice of hydraulic fracturing, imposed what we believe are the most stringent regulations of the technology anywhere in the country. And now we have to work through the difficult job of putting that legislation into a form that producers understand what's required of them, communities understand what kind of information they're going to be receiving. But we're confident and optimistic that we now can move forward, look at developing this enormous resource that, that lies underneath the San Joaquin Valley, and, you know, hopefully find a pathway to bring those the benefits of the resource to the valley.
Well, Professor Gillespie, you know, you're down there in Kern County. What do they think about SB4?
They're a little bit worried about some of the restrictions. I think they're probably waiting to see how it's going to be implemented. And that is that's a big question at this point.
Okay. Well, Professor Merrill, what about this dispute about public access to information that may impact health versus the company's right to keep their trade secrets? In this case, it's the chemical mix used in fracking. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the main problems, is because in SB4 that wasn't completely addressed, the medical profession treating someone with a fracking-related medical problem has access to the chemical information. That doctor does. He can share it with somebody else that's been pre-approved. But my understanding and the interpretation of the law is a real problem, in that that doctor would be prevented from sharing that widely within the medical profession, for example, at medical conferences and so on. And so that's a major impact on public health protection.
Professor Gillespie, do you agree with that?
Mostly, I think part of the problem is that people are, because it's kept secret, people assume the worst. And I think it would be good for the companies to come clean about this. I mean, on the average, you know, 99% of what's in a fracking fluid for shale gas is water and sand. But a very small percentage exists of these different chemical compounds. And if you have a 4 million gallon frack job like they have in the Marcellus, they use, say, 900 gallons of hydrochloric acid in that. So even though it's 0.01% of the total fluid, that still seems like a lot of acid. But, you know, something like that, hydrochloric acid, it just listing the different compounds in there, especially if they're on the EPA list of potentially hazardous chemicals, and not necessarily putting their amount in, I think should be something that seems reasonable.
Tupper, what do you think? Should the industry be allowed, the companies in the industry be allowed to keep their trade secrets?
Well, I think it's important to note, and we don't actually believe that this was one of the controversial issues in the bill. We have supported, as an association, mandatory disclosure of the chemicals used in hydraulic fracturing for a couple of years now. And the state of California and other state and federal statutes recognize there are legitimate reasons that trade secrets are protected. And there are a lot of mechanisms that the state uses to evaluate requests to hold back information on trade secrets in foods and chemicals and all kinds of consumer products. And all of those, or any of those mechanisms, are perfectly fine with us. We were agnostic about how the state goes about acknowledging and protecting legitimate trade secrets. There are reasons why consumers should care about protection of trade secrets, but that's probably a subject for another day.
Another show. Professor Gillespie, you were talking about the water being used in these fracking procedures. What amount of water are we talking about?
Well, it varies from within different parts of the country. For instance, North Dakota in the Bakken Shale, which is probably a fairly decent analog to the Monterey, at least as close as we can get, uses about 2 million gallons of water for each well that they frack. And some of the shales in West Texas use up to 4, and so do some in the Marcellus, so 4 million gallons. And so that's quite a lot of water.
So, Tupper, I was just wondering, with Tupper, where does that water come from?
Well, let me finish what perhaps Professor Gillespie was going to say, which is, in California, the water usage numbers are quite different. We did an analysis of all of the hydraulic fracturing that was reported on the Frac Focus website in 2012, and all of our members and all of the independent association members now report all of their hydraulic fracturing activity on that website. The average, there were about 560-some wells hydraulically fractured in 2012 in California, and the average amount of water use in those wells was about 116,000 gallons. Now, it is likely, if the technology proves as successful in California as it has elsewhere, that you will see those numbers go up. But the amount of water used in California right now is very, very small, certainly related or when compared to other uses of water.
If I could
I apologize for interrupting you, Professor Gillespie. Did Tupper mention or make the comments that you wanted to make?
Right, and I think he led into something really important in terms of how much fracking uses versus other types of industries. For instance, in North Dakota, they're using about 22,400 acre-feet of water per year for fracking. We, right now in the San Joaquin Valley, use about 31,000 acre-feet per year just for our steam flood operations, and the farmers use 2 million acre-feet per year.
Okay.
So that kind of gives you an idea of the order of magnitude of water use we're talking about.
Okay, Professor Merrill, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I think it's most, I mean, we first of all, we need to know, are we talking about the older style of fracking out of a single well vertical, or are we talking about the newer one? And also, the Monterey, depending on its depth and other issues, is going to be probably require more water. And a major concern in the valley, as everybody knows, especially from the farming community, is the current concern over our so-called water crisis.
The amount of water used.
I'm
wondering, so Tupper, where does the water come from? Where would they get the water?
Oil companies purchase water or own water just like any other water users. And they have, you know, the production, as Professor Gillespie mentioned, the production of oil in Kern County has been going on for 100-plus years. And for many of those decades, a lot of water has been used for steam flooding and other ways of enhanced oil recovery. And so companies have well-established commercial relationships with water providers. They have a long-standing and very good working relationship with the agricultural community in the valley. Water is something that is going to have to be, will be an issue in the future, but this is an industry that has a long history of managing water, has long-standing relationships with entities involved, and we don't see this as it should not be viewed, in our view, as a constraint on developing this resource.
Okay, well, what about Tupper? What about the wastewater? You hear a lot about that—the wastewater that's produced as a result of fracking—and some people are saying that it could seep into the aquifer. What are your comments on that?
Well, I mean, all I can tell you, there's all kinds of very highly emotionally charged information out there. The U.S. EPA has testified twice before the U.S. Congress that they have no documentation that hydraulic fracturing fluid has ever contaminated groundwater. Perhaps your other guests may want to weigh in, but I mean, the hydraulic fracturing takes place many thousands of feet separated from any sort of groundwater aquifers, and the fact that the oil has remained where it is because there's many layers of geology that separates it from the groundwater. That I don't think people who are familiar with the technology really are concerned that somehow fluid at 6,000 or 8,000 feet is going to migrate up into an aquifer at maybe a couple of hundred feet.
Yeah. So, Professor Merrill, 6,000 to 8,000 feet below the surface, is there a problem here?
Well, it's the problem is not with the fracking process itself; it's with the wastewater disposal. That has been the problem in the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania, and it has a big part in why the state of New York has banned fracking, at least presently, because wastewater disposal in Pennsylvania is largely under county regulation, and that's where the seepage has occurred into aquifers, and also in areas, and it would be something to worry about in the valley, where you have old abandoned well fields in which the casing and or the cementing process has deteriorated because of the age of the wells.
Well, let me ask Professor Gillespie. Maybe you can mediate this. what are your thoughts on this? Is fracking going to, wastewater from fracking going to seep into the aquifer?
I think in our valley, well, a couple of things. First of all, there have been a couple of documented cases, Dimock, Pennsylvania, Pavilion, Wyoming, again, as Dr. Merrill mentioned, these were associated with well casings. The wells just have very poor mechanical stability at this point. They're very unstable. And that is something that I think we should all be aware of. That seems to be the most common way for this stuff to get to the surface. This also occurred, as he mentioned, as a result of wastewater disposal. Now, as far as the geology goes, the Marcellus is a very old formation. It's 400 million years old. It's very brittle compared to many of the formations here in the San Joaquin Valley. We're about 10,000 feet deep, and probably the upper 5,000 of that is very young deposits, which are very plastic. They're ductile. They can be shaped almost like modeling clay. And it's very, very hard, as long as you're fracking deep, it's very, very hard to send a fracture through such a soft medium. It's like trying to fracture Play-Doh. It doesn't work.
Okay, so you're saying that they wouldn't use fracking here then?
That they would use fracking at depths.
At depths,
but,
okay.
However, the idea that the fractures could somehow penetrate up through the ductile clays near the surface in our very young basin is unlikely. They're more likely to travel through well bores.
Well, I'm thinking now I should have taken a geology course in college.
sorry.
But what about, let me ask you this, Professor Gillespie. What about this issue on earthquakes? People are saying that somehow fracking either causes earthquakes or they shouldn't be in a seismically sensitive area.
That's interesting. We had a speaker last night, actually, at the San Joaquin Geological Society talking about some research that the National Academy of Sciences have done on that. And they just released this late in the summer. And their conclusions were that the actual act of fracking hasn't created any earthquakes of a size that you could actually feel, that being about a magnitude 3.
Okay.
However, they have generated earthquakes from water disposal of frack fluid. And that's been in Arkansas, Ohio, and Texas.
Oklahoma.
Okay, well, I want to ask Tupper. Tupper, do you agree with that?
Well, I am familiar with the research that Dr. Gillespie is talking about. One of the things that I think is important to make note of here in California, when we talk about wastewater disposal, there are tremendous volumes of water that are produced along with oil in California, and this is unrelated to the process of hydraulic fracturing. If you look at just sheer volumes, on average, we get 10 to 15 barrels of water for every barrel of oil, and that has been true for a very, very long time. And so, again, the industry, the state of California, local agencies have developed methods to deal with that water. Much of it, most of it, is reinjected back into the zones from which it was withdrawn. The areas where there have been earthquakes have involved the introduction of a lot of water into areas that are not terribly wet to start with, and there's some belief that perhaps the water is lubricating rock formations and therefore allowing earthquakes. I mean, we have a long history, successful history of managing water. The volumes of the fracturing fluid are minuscule in compared to the total volume of water that is produced as a result of hydraulic fracturing.
Okay, well, up next, a discussion on two new studies on fracking and what a fracking-driven oil boom may mean for the Valley. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about fracking in California and fracking on the Monterey Shale Formation in particular with Bob Merrill, professor of geology at Fresno State, Tupper Hull, vice president of strategic communications with Western States Petroleum Association, and Janice Gillespie, professor of geology at CSU Bakersfield. So, Professor Merrill, let's go to you. What about these the positive things about fracking? You know, it's going to provide good jobs in a pretty impoverished area. It's going to help our energy independence. Are these benefits, do they outweigh the costs in your mind?
They certainly may not outweigh the costs as such, but I think what we need to look at is the special skills that are required in fracking. How many of those skills are readily available here in the valley? My understanding is that in some of the fracking that's gone on in Monterey County, the teams came from outside of California, and some of them were even from foreign countries, so that the local employment, at least in the fracking aspect, may not be improved. If the production of oil from these from the Monterey, if it's successful, may boost employment. There's also the issue of how long a fracked well really produces oil, because many of these have rapid decline curves.
Okay. Well, Tupper, what do you think? Do the positives outweigh the negatives? I'm assuming you're going to say yes.
Well, we certainly think that, you know, there are a tremendous amount of economic opportunities presented. The Energy Information Administration estimates the size of the resource in the Monterey at upwards of 15.4 billion barrels. That's two-thirds of the entire shale oil resource in the United States. We've seen states like North Dakota and parts of Texas see tremendous economic benefits. North Dakota has the lowest unemployment rate and the fastest growing economy in the United States, and that's largely because of the shale resource.
You know, it's interesting. I actually read somewhere that the amount that we're talking about here in the Monterey Shale Formation is equivalent to about half of Saudi Arabia's oil fields, just to give people a perspective.
It is a tremendous amount of oil. It is important to note, you know, the benefits that could derive are dependent, of course, on the pace and the rate at which that resource can be developed and brought to market. I will say that to get a better picture of this, we've engaged a couple of professors from CSU Fresno, Dr. Avalos and Dr. Rivera, to look at what this would mean from a jobs and wealth creation perspective for the Valley. Unfortunately, I don't have those numbers yet. That study's very close to being done. But we did have USC look at it on a statewide basis. If you took that oil and you had a rate of production similar to what has occurred in North Dakota, and the numbers are quite large, they're statewide between 500,000 and upwards to 2.8 million new jobs in California as a result of that resource.
I'm familiar with that study. They also said that the state would generate about almost $25 billion in state and local tax revenue in 2020.
Correct.
So, there's some economic benefits. So what do you think, Professor Gillespie? Do you think that the benefits outweigh the costs?
I think they can if everybody plays by the rules. For instance, I've been really surprised to see how well these wells have performed in other places. After about a 30% initial decline, the wells seem to decline very slowly, which surprised me, at least in most of these other areas. I don't think anyone knows yet what's going to happen to those wells when they frack them a second and third time. It's still a little too soon to say, but they certainly are a lot longer lasting than I thought they would be.
You know,
and the jobs that they generate will be, you know, jobs not like a job at McDonald's, but it will be a well-paid job.
Yeah. You know, I understand that there's going to be two studies, a federal study and a state study, about the potential risks of fracking. So what do you think about that, Professor Gillespie? Do you think that that's a good idea? And should there be a moratorium until the results of those studies come out?
At this point, we really haven't cracked the code in the Monterey. Oxy down here is probably the most active in working with the shales, and they've been doing that since 1998. And at this point, I think it's really important for the state to get, and I think the oil industry should be right with them on this, is to take a lot of background measurements in the freshwater aquifers and the air quality right now. I mean, it will help everybody in the long run to find out, you know, what was the chemistry like pre-fracking, so we know if there should be any blame to go around once it starts. But I don't see any reason at this point for a moratorium, because I think it's proceeding very slowly right now. The Monterey is a very complex formation.
Tupper, what do you think? Should companies get involved in creating a baseline of the environment right now before fracking really takes off?
Well, I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of research done into this technology. I know a lot of people find that interesting because they're told we don't know enough. We don't know, you know, there hasn't been a lot of research. There has been a lot of research. More importantly, I think under Senate Bill 4, there's going to have to be testing of water before and after fracturing takes place, now required by the state. But I think it's important to know when people talk about moratoriums that we have been utilizing this technology in California for some 60 years now. It has not been utilized to the extent that it is in these other states. But it is a well-understood technology. We've utilized it successfully, and no one has ever identified any harm to the environment or to the public health as a result of the practice in California. So I think that we now have a much more robust regulatory environment that we're operating in. There's a heightened sensitivity to the potential, but to prevent the enormous benefits from bringing this abundant energy supply to consumers because of fears and not facts is not an approach that we should take.
Tubber, let me ask you this. Under the new state law, State Department is going to be drafting regulations, but they're not coming out until 2015. Should there be a moratorium until 2015 till the regulations come out?
No, because every operator in California under that law is required to meet all of the new provisions in that bill while the state goes about implementing the various provisions. So beginning on January 1, the operators are going to operate under a very rigid and stringent set of regulations. It's important to note that these are operators who've been operating successfully in the Valley, have been providing energy, creating jobs, and they have done it in concert with already rigid regulations. We don't recognize in California that for decades we have had the most robust well-casing standards. Other states have looked to California as a model for how to regulate energy production. The well-casing standards are very strict in California. That's why we are having a conversation about potential, because we have no evidence of harm or hazard to point to.
Okay, well, let me ask Professor Merrill this. I mean, listen, we're talking about really high-paying jobs. I think most people agree the jobs are pretty good in terms of pay. Very strict regulations have been passed, or a law has been passed in California now. They're going to regulate it. Why not just allow? And there haven't really been any accidents to report, so why not allow them just to continue?
Well, I think one of the reasons most of these haven't had any accidents in California is that most of the fracking has occurred in very remote areas in the southwestern part of the valley, really far from any sizable communities. The Monterey extends widely, not only in the valley, but throughout much of California in seismically active areas. And I think the biggest problem is not so much with the fracking process itself, as we've already stated, because it occurs at great depth, but it's with the controls over wastewater disposal, wastewater treatment, and not only the fracking fluids, but the produced water and so on, when that is put down into older abandoned wells or disposed of improperly, and the state budget to have the proper inspections.
Well, you know what? We've only got a minute left in the segment, so pretty quickly, and I ask this last question. That is, so is fracking at the Monterey Shale Formation going to be California's next gold rush or California's next natural disaster? Very briefly, Professor Merrill.
Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Oh, wait and see. Okay, Professor Gillespie?
Well, I'd sure like to see it become a nice, safe gold rush.
And Tupper?
Well, I think it's a gift that California has been given, this vast energy resource, and we also operate under very strict and a very, very high level of sensitivity to the environment. So I think people should be pretty optimistic and pretty pleased that we have this opportunity presented to us.
Well, I want to thank you, Tupper Hull, Vice President of Strategic Communications with Western States Petroleum Association, Bob Merrill, Professor of Geology at Fresno State, and Professor Janice Gillespie of Geology, Professor of Geology at CSU Bakersfield. Thanks, all of you, for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.